I know a few voice actors who have lost jobs that said, hey, we worked with you for 3 years, but we're not going to hire you for year four because we already own your voice and we already have the rights to your audio. What happens with that audio file that we recorded?
KI, wir müssen sprechen.
Der Podcast mit Anna-Sophia Lumpe und Sebastian Eck.
Herzlich willkommen zu unserer neuen Folge von KI, wir müssen sprechen. Heute haben wir einen internationalen Gast. Tim Friedlander ist hier. Tim ist der Gründer und Präsident der National Association of Voice Actors, NAVA, und er ist Co-Präsident für den englischen Sprachraum bei United Voice Artists, UVA. Hi Tim, great to have you.
Hi.
Hello, hello. I understood parts of that. I got the few words.
I said a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to get letters.
Perfect.
Yeah, you're the president of NAVA in the U.S., but you're also founder and president, of course, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
What prompted you to found NAVA?
That is a good question. Part of what I've done here, I'm in Los Angeles, and part of what I've done for the last 10 years was kind of navigate this voiceover industry in a way that not a lot of people have navigated it. I've been in the industry since 1996, but I left for about 12 years, and I was teaching music and I was performing. And when I came back into the industry, it was completely different than it had been when I had been in it earlier. And a lot of us just didn't know what to do. A lot of us were just failing. So I always say I put together a studio and a bunch of classes to try and help all of us who were failing in voiceover figure out how to get into voiceover. And we found that there was this big gap of information between those who were starting out and those who were professionals. And there's this big gulf in the middle that nobody knew what to do. And there was really no trusted place to go to get information. If you weren't a SAG-AFTRA member, which is the union in the United States, at the time, if you weren't an AFTRA member, so I'll digress slightly. SAG and AFTRA
<That's all right.
laughs> have only been SAG-AFTRA for about 12 years. Prior to that, there was SAG, which was the Screen Actors Guild, and there was AFTRA, which was the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. So most voice actors were in AFTRA, and most screen actors on camera were in SAG-AFTRA. So prior to the merger, there was definitely kind of more of a voiceover-centric place to go get information. But after the merger, it became much more difficult to kind of get information. And if you're not in the union, it's very hard to get information about a career. And there were a lot of just people popping up, and there's classes to take, and there's a bunch of other things that are available to do, but nothing that we really knew about and trusted. And so I started doing that with my studios here in Los Angeles, and we were doing classes 3 or 4 times a week with just a bunch of voice actors who would just show up, and we would just kind of navigate this industry together. And about 4 or 5 years ago, SAG-AFTRA changed their healthcare rules, and a lot of people lost their healthcare who were in the union. And so we looked at, what could we do to help provide healthcare for freelance voice actors. And so our original launch was specifically to offer healthcare for freelance voice actors.
Mm-hmm. And you are separate from SAG-AFTRA. You're not included.
We are, absolutely, yeah. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we're an association. SAG-AFTRA is a union. I am a SAG-AFTRA member. I've been in SAG-AFTRA since 2016. I'm on 4 of the committees in SAG-AFTRA. I'm on the policy committee, I'm on the organizing committee, I'm on the new tech committee, and I'm on the voiceover committee. So I'm very active within SAG-AFTRA. SAG-AFTRA, Duncan Crabtree Ireland, who's the national executive director of SAG-AFTRA, has been on panels with us, multiple panels over this last year. Has been, they're obviously in the middle of multiple strikes and negotiations. So, he's been available and receptive as possible over this last year. But a lot of us has been NAVA out there, working, in the U.S. and then working alongside UVA and everybody else globally to try and help affect the industry, but also navigate this new technology and this new industry that has changed, one, dramatically because of COVID, because of the pandemic, and two, because of the new technology that's here. So it's a very long roundabout way to get back to that. Yes.
No, it's a huge endeavor, and I'm curious, why did you feel like you wanted to not just join but also found United Voice Artists with all of us?
Yeah, I think part of that is for many of us who work in voiceover, we know that it's a global industry. We know that what we do affects the rest of the world. We know what the rest of the world does affects everybody. And I think, it was important for us to know that, or for us to try and find a way that we could could kind of basically get the world to work together. These tech companies are not stopping at the borders. They're not going to stop, you know, Amazon and Google and whoever else is OpenAI based in California. They're not just working in California. They're not working in the U.S. They're not just working in North America. They're working globally. And the only way for any of us to be able to have any kind of leverage or any kind of say in the conversation against billion-dollar companies is to do it from a global level. And I think that's really where we have this opportunity. And at the very least, what we can do is share information and educate everybody around the world, because a lot of what we see in the U.S., we see show up in other countries 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 6 months, or a year later. So we're seeing, contracts now that are showing up in Kenya, that are showing up in Germany, that we saw 6 months ago in the U.S. and already are familiar with and have navigated. And we can kind of possibly see potentially what could possibly be coming down the line, and maybe we can stop it here in the U.S. and maybe we can, and maybe we have to figure out a way to stop it somewhere else.
Because I feel like us as Europeans, we really profited from the vast amount of knowledge you guys at Nava have already acquired over the last year before we founded UVA.
Yeah.
And it's almost that's also why we wanted to talk to you, because I feel that global tech companies, and a lot of them are American, keep pushing this narrative onto Europe that AI is the future, and it's already happening, and it's you're not going to be able to get by without it, and it's going to infiltrate all of our art and everything. Yeah. And why we wanted to talk to you is because we want to know, how is voice acting in the U.S. right now? Because you're further ahead than we are.
Yeah.
And I personally have to say, I don't really believe the gospel. I don't believe that is the great solution, and it's giving a great, product.
No,
in a nutshell, how is the U.S., Tim?
it is... The U.S. has struggled with emerging tech in the art industry for decades now, right? We had Napster, which destroyed the music industry. We talk a lot about working class blue collar artists. You don't have a lot of working class blue collar musicians who can make a living working as a musician in the United States. There's you can be a musician in the evening and you have to work a day job to be able to continue to do the things that you want to do. The strike, there was a big strike in 2000, the SAG strike in 2000, which proliferated this idea that you could work outside of a union. And prior to 2000, the thought that you could be any kind of artist, voice actor or actor of any kind and make a professional living outside of SAG was unheard of. And now here we are 22 years later, where 80% or more of the industry in the United States is non-union and voiceover. 80 probably to 90% of the work that happens on a daily basis is outside of SAG-AFTRA.
Okay.
It's terrible. Because you have, if this work was done under SAG-AFTRA, you would already have protections in place for AI, because those protections would be embedded in the existing contracts. And I think what you see now is a big gap. As with a lot of places, there's a lot of people at the top, a lot of people at the bottom, and there's not a lot of people in the middle. There's a few people at the top, there's a few people at the bottom, there's a lot of people in the middle who aren't making a living, because they're kind of stuck in this middle ground of the industry. There's a lot more work than there's ever been, but it's going to less people. And the biggest concern that we have, and I think we've talked about this in various UVA meetings, is this kind of elimination of the entry-level jobs, wherein probably I think the biggest damage we're going to see is in 5 to 7 years, where the generation is retiring from voiceover. There's not new voice actors, not human voice actors to take their place, because people haven't been training and learning, because AI has taken those entry-level jobs. And so what you end up is this decimation of the industry as it goes forward. For those who are working, there are many, many very successful voice actors at the top end of this industry who are working very well outside of the union. There's a lot of people who make a very, very good living not in the union. Mm. One of the things that we've always said, what we do with SAG-AFTRA is we're union agnostic. Our goal is not to to tell anybody whether they should be union, non-union, or FICOR. I'm not sure if you're familiar with FICOR,
Financial Corps.
So that's a third status of union affiliation that you can have. And what we do is we tell people that, you know, you have to learn everything about the business and decide at what point you want to go into the union or you need to stay out of the union. If you're working under a union contract, you have protections, you have lawyers, you have the ability to make sure that you get paid. You have the ability to go after and get your residuals. If you're not working in the union, you don't have those protections in place. So always working under a union contract provides you more protections. But the contract will only be union if the producer wants to run that job through the union. And there's no requirement that they do that.
And because it's become so common not to work through the union, there is so much work outside of the union.
Absolutely. Well, and the speed of voiceover, the union can't keep up with the speed of voiceover. It hasn't been able to for a long time, you know, with the rise of pay-to-play sites, with the rise of, you know, direct casting. At least in the U.S., a lot of voice actors just do direct marketing. You know, they reach out to production companies and just work with production companies directly. You'll get an audition at 9 o'clock in the morning. You'll submit it by noon. They'll cast it at 2 o'clock and they want to record at 5.
Wow.
That's not something that the union has the ability to do. You cannot, you know, some projects take multiple weeks to get cleared through the union and producers and clients who are working on a deadline a lot of times don't have the time.
And so that's the development of the last, let's say 5 to 10 years or?
I'd say that's 10 to 15. I mean, that's something that's been happening for a long, I'd say that started with the rise of like Voice 123 in 2004 with kind of the pay to play sites, the voices.com, Voice 123, Bidalgo.
Those big gatekeepers.
Gatekeepers to a certain extent. Some people would say that it kind of democratized you got rid of the gatekeepers, rid of the agents, you got rid of the casting directors, and now you have the voice actor who can work directly with the creator. And so some would say that, you know, that in that sense it is, it's eliminated a lot of the gatekeepers. I think, you know, what the gatekeepers do is that they also ensure that the rates are being kept safe and that the gatekeepers are protecting the voice actors. And, you know, so those gatekeepers are not just keeping people out, they're protecting you once you're also inside the gates to a certain extent. But I think, you know, some people would say that the pay to plays, you know, really kind of to a certain extent democratized the industry and took it out of being LA and New York centric and open it up to the rest of the country for good or for bad. You know, you now have anybody can, you know, we've all probably seen the ads of like, you know, buy a $50 microphone and pay $200 to get on pay to play sites and you can make six figures in a year. And the reality is that's just not the reality of how that works.
So maybe the count of people who work in this business was like rising up, and now you would say it shrinks back again?
I think there are more people who are trying to work in the industry. I think that there are less people who are being as successful as they were. But I think the industry as a whole is larger than it's probably ever been. It's probably more people actively in the U.S. at least trying to be voice actors than there had ever been.
Yeah, it also came with COVID. A lot of actors decided to get mics and become voice actors.
Exactly.
Work from home, all this.
Yep.
And I mean, there's nothing against doing that, but we've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
But of course, there's a difference between someone who's already worked as a voice actor and then just starts to work from home and someone who's never done it before and just said, oh, it's just a microphone.
It's the same
as before, you know. Instead of an audience, there's a microphone. But what I'm curious about is whether it really is the case that AI voices or voice clones are taking a lot of jobs and people are actually happy with the results they're getting. If you can elaborate on that.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, what we've seen, we're currently have a list of like of 15 people who've lost jobs to AI in some capacity that we know of. There's a class action lawsuit that's happening in the U.S. right now against Lovo.ai, Lovo.ai. But I think, you know, I think that the danger, and I'll try and wrap this This is very deep as we go down the rabbit hole into this of where the danger is and what we've seen so far. But I don't know. We've seen very few people who have lost jobs to clones of themselves. And by that, I mean somebody's done a job, somebody recorded their voice, and they said, great, we're not going to hire anymore because we've recorded your voice already. That's happening. We do know it's happening. We've heard from engineers who are saying, we didn't want to call you in for a pickup, so we just threw your voice into 11 labs and fixed the job. And actors are like, no, you can't be doing that. So that in that sense, we're seeing these kind of, you know, pickups are going away. In some capacity, that's something we're actually actively going to confront on Monday of next week with the agents and engineers in the U.S. But the bigger danger, and this is something that's kind of this silent loss, is that the jobs just if they're not going to send out an audition anymore because they're just going to use an AI voice. So you don't necessarily know if you've lost the job because you never saw that it existed in the first place.
So are there less? Is there less work because more work is done by AI?
There is this feeling this year that there has been less work, and since probably November of last year, and that could be attributed to multiple things. We had a strike last year, and we're coming off of a massive strike that shut down Hollywood. It shut down the United States entertainment industry for months. During that time, you know, how many people? Some people either have just decided never to come back, or they've moved to AI. Or they are just not going to do the work until they can see that this AI conundrum, or whatever you want to call it, is kind of figured out. I think that there are some of these quick jobs that need to be done are just going to AI for sure. I know a few voice actors who have lost jobs that said, "Hey, we worked with you for 3 years, but we're not going to hire you for year four because we already own your voice and we already have the rights to your audio, and so we're just going to synthesize your voice," which currently in the U.S., and this is probably the same, I think we've talked about this in UVA, is this kind of work for hire assignment of rights clauses that happen. Everybody in the U.S., when we sign something, we're a work for hire. So we sign over that performance to the company who pays us. We are, and what voice actors do, and if you want to make this sound, you know, just on the real basic sense, we sell our voices for money. That's what we do, right?
That sounds, you know, so dirty.
It's terrible. And what we do, and we give that away. And when we get paid, we give over the rights to what happens with that audio file that we recorded.
That one audio file, yeah.
That one audio file, and we have given over the rights to how that company uses that audio file. Now, the argument that we've been having, and this is something that we've been working on for the last, since about January, so this is what we were in Washington, D.C. talking about, is there's a difference between signing over the rights to that performance, that audio file, and signing over the rights to have our biometric data extracted out of that performance.
Completely.
And currently, you can, what this contract, these contracts say is that the voice, the producer, the client, owns the rights to that audio file and can do whatever they want to, supposedly within the scope of that project, but within the scope of that project, they could continue to do multiple more projects, multiple
of
recordings.
So it's kind of open, an open clause
it's very
them.
Open. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, where there's, you know, in perpetuity, a lot of the contracts say in perpetuity across the universe, in all technology now or for to ever be invented.
On any planet.
On any planet. Exactly. Yes. So I, you know, you can give it to aliens and you sign over the rights to that.
And different dimensions. Don't
different
forget
dimensions.
The dimensions.
Exactly. Multi-dimensions. Hopefully all of my multi-dimensional voices are getting paid for this, for this
maybe
general.
Maybe God
universe.
Somewhere else.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
God, Tim.
In a whole other, so many other options. But I think, you know, one of what we've been looking at is this idea of legally acceptable and ethically acceptable. And, you know, currently there are lots of things that have been, this AI generation is falling under a legally okay, but we consider to not be ethically okay. And that's where we're trying to figure out how to navigate this new kind of understanding. You know, there are privacy laws, there's data protections to a certain extent in the U.S., but not as strong or as robust as they are in other countries in the EU or in Europe, in various different countries. And now you're looking at various different country laws having various different protections And so, you know, ideally then an AI company or a tech company would set their laws to be, you know, the most robust with the most protective country, but that doesn't always happen.
So, I wonder, the Elvis Act has just been passed in Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that really what you guys are looking for?
Yeah,
would help everyone?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Elvis Act is a great blueprint. It's in one state. And so that
Is something that we really don't understand. It's like,
yeah,
how can that be?
And that's, you know, that's one of the neat things about the U.S. is that there's very much of this ability for each state to determine what is best for that state. And so Texas versus California versus Florida versus New York, you're going to have different laws. So, you know, there's different protections in every state. And as as we mentioned earlier, not only is voiceover a global industry, it's no longer just a state industry. So voice actors are signing contracts, living in California, signing a contract with a producer in New York, with the director in Canada, and the producers in Sweden, and you're going to have a scriptwriter in Japan. And you sign the contract, and the production company is based in Japan, so my contract now says that I have to, I'm protected by the laws of Japan. So...
would not accept that. It would not.
and what choice do you have if you want to work is the problem.
Yeah, right? See, that's also very different here, but still interesting. But what I wonder is then, so if this law is in Tennessee, what does that mean? Anybody from Tennessee, anybody who lives in Tennessee, or any production that takes place in Tennessee is protected by it?
The general rule of thumb is that you are protected by the place in which the work is physically done. So where the voice actor would be under the laws that are protected. So if I'm in California, I'm protected under California laws. If I record in California, even if the producer's in Tennessee. Now, some would argue but now I'm protected under Tennessee. Once the audio file ends up in Tennessee, that I would be under the Tennessee laws. Mm. But then if the files end up in New York, am I under New York laws? So it kind of is based on where the contract, what's stated in the contract, under which jurisdiction you're going to be able to have protections under.
So you have to move physically to Tennessee.
Right, exactly. Well,
wondering if maybe you should open an agency in Tennessee covers all the voice actors.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, well, the voice actors would have to be actually in Tennessee physically when they do the work. So you'd have to actually record. Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. Yep.
A minor little detail.
A minor little detail, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
And do you have to sign a contract every time, or is it a little thing on the invoice on which you claim the rights?
You're supposed to sign the contract every time, but very few outside of an agency are signing contracts. In the U.S., at least, email correspondence is legally binding, so as long as you have it written in an email.
Yeah.
You're okay. And so, you know, kind of, you know, one of the very first things that we did with Nava, which was about a year and a half ago, was put out a publicly available AI writer for people who don't have contracts that you could just add this here. Here's my contract, but also here's my Nava AI writer that says you cannot use my voice for machine learning or to create a synthetic version of my voice.
See.
BDS profited off of that. We translated that for German members.
It's been great. We're seeing it coming back.
With permission, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And with the help of AI. No.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. No. it's been great because there is nothing, you know, there was nothing out there. And people didn't even think about reading their contracts to make sure there's an AI clause in there. We saw our first audition. There was an audition yesterday, the day before, that came out on Voice 123, that in the audition, Voice 123 stated the client has already signed the Nava AI writer before they put the audition out, which is great. That's all the basic we want to see is like, I just want somebody to, I want to do an audition and I want to know that they're not going to use my voice for AI. It's simple.
Definitely.
It's not complex. It's not, you know, we don't need to run this by legal to say we're not going to steal your voice. Are you going to steal my voice and use it for AI? No. Great. Sign the contract. Put it in an email.
Yeah, we've been getting some answers like, I'm sorry, we can't put it in there because we are not yet sure what our stance is on this.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't really matter because I do have an opinion
on
this and it says no. It's
like, yeah, exactly.
Well, you don't have to decide this for me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think, you know, hopefully, you know, one of the outcomes of this, I think with, you know, on a global scale, and we've seen this in the US, is more voice actors who are willing to stand up for themselves and say no if they see a contract they don't agree with. And to be able to say, no, I'm sorry, but people have, you know, people have reached out to me. I mean, I spend a lot of time with just, hey, Tim, can you answer my question about this? Is this job safe to do? And I say, well, I'm not a lawyer, but what I can, you know, I can look through this and tell you how I would feel about it. And leave it up to the voice actor to decide. People are turning down jobs if there aren't protections in place because they are concerned about the future of this industry. And having something tangible to say, did this client sign the AI rider? They did. Great. I feel comfortable. They said no. I'm sorry. I can't work for you. You're not going to put protections in place.
This is so helpful because information is key here.
Yeah,
and I feel that the more we explain what the process really is, and that it's not even about voice cloning. That's not even the thing. Mm. It's the training material that is so valuable. And I also feel that once we publish the guidelines on AI, more people now understand what the actual problem is with these inclusive contracts.
Absolutely.
And they are standing up for themselves. So, but that we really profited of UVA and the exchange with all the other countries,
and that's especially that's the U.S. And there's been nothing. You know, there's FIA has existed, but nothing in the voiceover industry specifically. And the voiceover industry, as anybody who's worked in multiple industries, the voiceover industry is very unique. There are some very unique things about the way the industry works. About, you know, even just being in being a studio owner, I have three studios in LA. I've got one in Nashville, so we do have one in Tennessee, and we're opening one in Boston that's ready to open right now. We're kind of waiting until after the holiday to open that one.
Where do we send our demos?
Exactly.
Just asking for a friend.
That's a good question. Voice actors will go to a studio that is a music studio and they don't know how to handle voiceover, right? So so even just because you have a recording studio doesn't mean you know how to work the voiceover industry. Because you are an on-screen actor doesn't mean you know how to be a voice actor. So, you know, the voice and VO industry is unique in a lot of the very specific ways that it operates and works and functions. So having a group like UVA that can have this conversation globally, and these companies are casting globally, right? I mean, they're, you know, especially at least in the U.S., and I don't know, you know, how much of this is globally, is this kind of push for authenticity and authentic casting, making sure that if you're going to have a character who has something very specific about them, that you hire a voice actor who can be authentically true to that character. So, you know, what you're seeing, a lot of times is instead of hiring somebody in New York who can do a British accent, you can actually go to the UK and get somebody with a British accent. You want somebody with a German accent, you don't have to find somebody in Los Angeles who can do a German accent. You can go to Germany and get somebody, right? So this push for authenticity has globalized the industry, where you can go and find authentic voices. So, you know, wanting more voices from Africa, people want Togo and Kenya and Nigeria. So instead of finding somebody in the U.S., you can now go to Kenya and Nigeria. But that opens up now the dangers for those who are in Kenya and Nigeria, not knowing what protections they need to have in place from a potentially predatory company in the U.S. who is going to go and try and get them for, you know, dirt cheap prices and predatory contracts. So, you know, having these conversations and even going across, you know, whether you're even going from the U.S. to Germany and making sure that, you know, that a U.S. contract isn't trying to be pushed into Germany in a way that is predatory because the terms are different in the U.S. and understanding that these companies can't just take a U.S. contract and just force it on everybody else. You have to look at this. You have to deal with the country that you're in, and you have to make sure that you're doing it correctly for the country that you're working in.
I feel that's also the big challenge for a lot of these artists, because it used to be that we went to the studio, we had a great time. Mm. I mean, we talked to each other.
Yeah,
it's one of the greatest jobs. Yeah. Everybody knows that. It's a lot of fun. And you got along with everyone. And at the end, you signed this little piece of paper and everything was good. You never had to look through that because, I mean, what dangers would it entail?
Right.
And then now we have the situation where the same people that were so happy-go-lucky now have to really take care of themselves and really protect themselves. And it's so difficult to explain to them that their friends are, well, they're still their friends, but they're now in a different position, and they also don't have the power to change it.
Right.
So it is hard. It is hard to kind of, you know, disillusion people maybe in a certain way.
A little bit, yeah.
And it's about self-responsibility, right?
It's very much about responsibility, taking responsibility for yourself. Yeah, of course. It's growing up, growing pains.
Right, yeah. Well, and you know, it's at least in the, you know, here, you know, we try and get the contracts ahead of time. But if you show up to an audition, you show up to a session and you're there 10 minutes early or 5 minutes early, you're ready to walk in, they hand you a 9-page contract, you know,
no chance.
Are you, you know, you have, you know, you have to say, I'm great. Give me 15 minutes to sit and read my contract. You just handed it to me, right? You just handed me the contract, you know, and this, I think, you know, is important for voice actors. Remember too, you know, is that we're one half of that contract, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the production company may have written it, but we're the ones who are signing it, and we have to agree to what's in that contract. And it doesn't have to be a unilateral agreement. We can redline it and we can say, I'm sorry, I don't agree. I need to change this term. I need to do this. That's what voice actors have to do, because, you know, even agents aren't seeing these contracts ahead of time. You know, we're currently dealing with, you know, we touched on this a little bit, but, you know, these contracts that we have signed and these files that we've been sending around for the last 20 years, are those contracts are being used against us to basically say, you know, they already have access to these files. Where do you think all these audio files came from that these companies are using?
Yeah.
Right.
But is this happening on a daily basis? Like handing out a paper like this to you?
It should, yeah. I mean, every time you go to an audition, I mean, every time you go to a job, you get a contract. A lot of times now it's DocuSign, so you'll get it ahead of time. You know, I have a job in 2 weeks and they sent me the contract yesterday. So I was able to read through it and sign it, you know, so well ahead of time.
Well, that's how it should be.
Fair enough.
You really should be able to read through stuff.
Absolutely. And have your agent. And it came from an agent, so I know my agent had read through it as well. And then I read through it again, just to double check and, you know, to make sure we signed it. But, you know, I mentioned earlier, there's actually three union, basically three statuses you could have. You could be in the union, SAG-AFTRA. You could be non-union, meaning you're not in SAG-AFTRA. Or you could be FICOR, which is a Supreme Court decision from 1950, which allows you to be a fees-paying non-member of the union. So you
good.
So that ruling was for people who wanted to be in the union but didn't want their dues to go towards political things they didn't agree with.
Okay.
So because First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, you didn't want to be forced to support speech that you don't agree with, but you still want the protections of the union. So you get the protections of the union and you pay your fees. But you can't run for office. You can't vote. And you can't take the classes. You don't get screeners. But you get the protections. If you work under a union contract, you get those same protections as being under a union contract. In this case, what it means is that you can work both union and non-union jobs. So because once you're in the union, once you're in SAG-AFTRA, you can no longer work non-union jobs. You every job you do has to be under a union contract, or you're in violation of the union rules, SAG-AFTRA rules.
Mm-hmm.
But these contracts that people have been signing for the last 20 years, people were signing them before they were in the union. So you've got now potentially voice actors who are in the union who are now protected, but are contracts that they signed 10 or 15 years ago are coming back to haunt them because that damage is being, you know, those audio files have been signed over and are being used currently.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not getting easier.
It's not getting easier. No, no.
And but another very important part of this is also, of course, the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any experience with the reaction of the audience to synthetic voices? And
people hate it, yeah. I mean, what we've seen so far is a big pushback. And people, you know, there was in February, Bandai Namco put out a game. And there, you know, on a Friday, somebody posted that they had AI generated a certain part of the game, like three words out of the game. And by Monday morning, that tweet had 1 million views. And Bandai Namco had to come out. And so, if you know, Bandai Namco is a big video game company.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to come out and spend that entire week doing damage control, saying, no, we did not use AI-generated voices in here. Unfortunately, it was a bad performance by the voice actor, so the voice actor basically got thrown to the bus, and they were like, no, that's... The voice actor was like, I would never say that, and the company, the engineer was like, well, as a matter of fact, you did. Here's wow. the audio file. That's what it sounds like.
Wow.
And then part of it was a bad edit. Like, you know, an editor had spliced together two different takes
of
an audio on accident, and it was just a bad edit. It was a human mistake, but it sounded like AI, and people were up in arms.
Wow.
And they had people don't want it, you know, because like from a consumer standpoint, I know that as a consumer that you're going to give me an AI generated movie that it cost you nothing because you fired everybody, but then you're going to still charge me the same price.
Yeah. Exactly. As, yeah. I don't I'm understand how anybody would want to pay for that.
No, they don't.
Really?
I mean, it only helps save money. The savings don't get passed along to the consumer.
No.
That's true, but that's the gospel that's been told to everyone. You know, everybody's going to have all this money and free time.
No.
It hasn't gotten to me yet.
No.
I'm still waiting.
But what's the percentage of spots, let's say, in an advertising break made by AI in the U.S.?
I don't know that on major networks. I don't think there's anything that we know of currently,
except for the Toys R Us.
Okay. Oh, Toys R Us, but that's like that was Ooh. Yeah,
not
that
to mention
really. That was kind of an anomaly. I think there's more on regional, like in like certain cities, smaller producers are using it. But we don't know because there's no requirement to label anything. There's no requirement for transparency to say that something is AI generated. So, you know, the best that can happen. And this is actually something that we posted yesterday on Twitter. Is that Morgan Freeman found his voice use somewhere, and he thanked the fans. Right. And so we put out a big post yesterday that said, thank you, fans, for finding this. You know, the voice actors can't hear everything, so please be our ears and let us know if you hear a synthetic voice, and let Nava know, and so we can help find that. So kind of, you know, basically kind of crowdsource if people are hearing synthetic voices or unauthorized voices.
Cool.
And that's the best thing we can do is consumers are pushing back. They don't want this crap. Like you look at, you know, you look at the pushback against Adobe. You know, people are leaving Photoshop and leaving Adobe for their AI language they have in there. Visual artists, you know, voice actors are kind of the biggest noise, but visual artists have been hit hardest and they got hit first.
But isn't there a toy for children in the US which is like talking to your children and answering by... answers made by AI, so there must be a way to sell those things in the U.S.
Well, I mean, there's nothing illegal about selling it. You can absolutely sell that. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we've been interacting with AI and machine learning for a decade, right? Mm. Siri, Alexa, Google Voice. I mean, children are raised on interacting with Alexa to ask questions. Hey, Google, what's the so they're Correct. Used to interacting with synthetic voices. That sound like synthetic. I mean, Alexa, we know Alexa's not a real voice.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, Google is not a real voice. Siri is not a real voice. Whoever the other ones are, you know, whoever Samsung has and whatever the other ones are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's already normalized this idea of interacting with a computer for information anyway. But now you have to look at the information you're getting. Is this information? I don't trust anything that an AI gives me. I don't trust
so
if I'm asking
work.
Information. Yeah.
So much work to, you know, check it again and again. I myself, I was really interested in using ChatGPT at the beginning when it came, like in 2022. I started using it because I'm a digital native. I love toys and stuff.
Yeah.
But after like a year or so, I was really bored by it because I basically used it for reformulating scripts and stuff. You don't have an idea, you just think, okay, maybe you can help me find something else here. But it was so redundant after a certain amount of time. And I feel that anybody who has some kind of education and has read books and has done some art and research and whatever, they're going to be bored.
Yeah.
Because it's not interesting. And yes, then you get those videos with, oh my God, it can do so much more as before. It's like, yeah, it can do more than before, but it still makes the same mistakes as before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still not very intelligent.
Mm.
No.
I mean, it's not intelligent at all, but it's also, it doesn't seem intelligent to me.
No.
And I feel that there's like a certain level of intelligence in humans. And once you are at that level, these tools don't really interest you, the output.
Yeah,
it is
right.
Ridiculous.
Well, but there's no imagination. There's no inspiration. There's no, you know, there's no soul in this. And I think if you, you know, like soul is whatever you decided, you know, it's very ephemeral. It's whatever you want it to be. But I think, you know, I think there are, even if you don't necessarily know what it is that you connect with something, like why somebody connects with a piece of music, or why they connect with a piece of art, or why they connect with something, you do know when it's missing. And when you don't connect with something, it just feels flat, and you can tell something feels wrong with it. I think that's what we're seeing now. A lot of people just don't want to. There's no connection with this content, because it's just content. It literally is just we need to fill up space so that we can put something on the air for people to listen to. It's not created for any other purpose than to fill up space.
And then there's the dead internet happening, where content is interacting with content.
Right, exactly.
There's no humans anymore.
Yeah.
And that's what it feels like sometimes. Like I watched this video the other day of this influencer, and he just showed all these different parts of the internet that are basically dead.
Yeah.
And part of that is AI, of course. And then there's more generating of stuff. And
machines talking to machines.
Yeah, machines talking to machines, right.
Cool.
Just for the heck of it. Why?
Right.
Well,
I think one of the things that hopefully, and this maybe is, I'm a optimistic pessimist. So I think there is, maybe I'm an optimistic realist. I don't know.
There's hope and death or what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that one of the things we may see as a positive outcome is this understanding and respect for human creation and for human artists and what it is to have a human having created something. Right. You know, and the people realize, it does feel different when a human creates something than when a machine creates something. So maybe it isn't as simple and easy as we thought it was just to be an artist. And, you know, like this idea that you're democratizing art. I mean, this democratizes art. Give people a pencil, give people a pen, support public education where they can can create art and actually make a living as an artist. That democratizes art. This is just if you want to talk about gatekeeping. This is the ultimate gatekeeper, because you have to, one, have a computer to do it. You have to have electricity. You have to have internet. You have to have the ability to run a computer. In order to do that, anybody on the planet can get a pencil and a pen and become an artist.
Absolutely. I think it's a cop-out to talk about democratizing art through AI. Yeah. Because somebody who thinks that art happens at the push of a button does not have the urge to create.
And something you call boomer art. Boomer art.
I call it boomer art.
Boomer art. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Like this. But do you see there's a hype at the moment, and maybe it's going to go flatten those symptoms at any time?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, we saw this with NFT, we saw it with blockchain, we saw it with cryptocurrency. You know, like, everybody wants to get on the big hype, and I don't know that there's a lot of money to be made being an AI company, at least not these small AI companies.
Absolutely.
I mean, how can you, you know, if you're going to sell, you know, look at some of these websites for $29.95 a month, you can get unlimited voice generation. How can anybody, just the cost of that?
Yeah.
Not enough people on the planet are going to want to subscribe to your website, to your plan, to be able to make it affordable. You know, you're going to end up like being Uber and Lyft and whatever. And they've never made money. They've lost money forever. I think Airbnb finally is making money, but they probably have just lost money forever.
Venture capital that goes in at the beginning,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you have a bubble, and at some point you got to get the money back.
Exactly. And I just don't see. I mean, there's not a lot of money. You know, we've been in the voiceover industry for years. There's not a lot of money in this industry.
Like, excuse me, scraping. Speak for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's not the billions and billions of dollars that people think they can extract out of the voices, right? I mean, you know, it's not just a, you know, we're not just a bunch of, you know, the voices aren't just hiding piles of gold behind our voices that you can just steal and take from AI.
Excuse me, you're
money.
The one with the five studios.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
have a Mr. Moneybags.
Well, they're certainly not gold-plated studios, you know.
Mr. Gold Digger, let's call him that way.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing left for anybody else. Yeah. Tim Friedlander
right,
has it all.
Yeah, right.
No, you're completely right. There's a lot of idealism in
yeah.
doing this.
Yeah.
Yes, we do get paid for it, but yeah. we also give a big chunk of worth to
Absolutely.
The product that we're yeah. voicing, and I feel people totally underestimate how much that work is connected to us and what we're actually yeah. giving. Because
yeah.
like, if you can pick a voice for $29.95. Anybody can pick that voice for $29.95.
Yeah, that's the point.
And if you're doing a wholesome commercial for, mm-hmm. I don't know,
yep.
something beautiful for families,
yep.
you
Absolutely.
Really don't want that voice to pop up on Pornhub.
Right. Well, and this exactly, and this is the consent, control, and compensation that we've talked about forever. Which is control is just
yeah.
you know, having control that bodily autonomy over what our body does and our voice says is something that we should have. Implicit, and I don't want my voice saying something that didn't physically come out of my vocal cords.
Right.
And I don't get the point. What's the reason for spending a $1 trillion media budget and saving right. a small amount of money in just hiring an AI instead of a real yeah. human? So I don't get it.
I think the original push, the push is to get rid of everybody in between so that you have the $1 trillion budget. And the one person who gets to keep that $1 trillion.
Hmm. Well, and also, I mean, maybe this is very, dystopian, but I do think it's about control.
Absolutely.
Controlling
yeah.
someone.
Mm-hmm.
Controlling humans' voices is just yeah. the first step.
And
when we see that, for example, those AI date bots are so popular,
yeah.
that is yeah. about somebody being yeah. with somebody else who will never contradict
yep.
you.
Mm. Yep.
And,
yeah.
well, in my opinion, that's kind of boring.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
I mean, you don't have to fight, but it really kind of defeats the purpose of growing.
Yeah. The UVA is only a year old, and I think we've, done some substantial work.
And the collective yeah. is just amazing. It's just beautiful yeah. how everybody's sharing. There's
yeah.
no, in my opinion, there's no egotism yeah. in UVA. It's about the purpose, It's
yeah.
there's this one goal that we have.
Yeah.
And even though this whole situation frustrates me at times very, very
yeah.
much, I feel that because we are humans and because
yeah.
we are resilient and because we are creative people, we
yeah.
were able to put up this wall and say
yeah.
no more.
Yeah.
And we're not going to stand for this. And we're using our creativity to stand together
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
connect.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things people forget about, is that voice actors, we spend most of our lives unemployed. We're always looking for work, right? I mean, we're always trying to find, we wake up every day unemployed. There's no guarantee we're getting paid today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different. That's a different mentality from people who are who are saying, well, I'm not getting out of bed unless I'm getting paid today. We have a whole different
that's
mentality.
Right.
We have, we are constantly on, we are small businesses. We are whatever you want to think about this. We are out there creating industry and business and jobs every single day in a way that most other people aren't.
We've got nothing but time.
Exactly. Exactly.
But a lot of it.
Yep.
That's
yeah.
true. Yeah,
yeah.
We're coming
yeah.
for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Tim, for this really great conversation. And
yeah.
thank you for your work in UVA,
yeah.
in Nava.
Yeah,
and, we're going to stay in touch definitely on UVA. And
yes, yes.
hopefully some people will know that there is an international group and we're not alone.
Yes. So UnitedVoiceArtists.com.
That's us.
That we are. Yes, that is us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome. It's great chatting.